This is Sportsline on WRMJ and WRMJ.com.
He breaks free. He's inside the 20, the 10, the 5.
A weekly in-depth look at the local high school sports scene.
Touchdown, Mercer County. Touchdown, Golden Eagles.
Sportsline is brought to you by your local country financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, auto, farm, or business.
Get a launch of three at the gun. No good, and the Rockets have won the game. The Rockets head back to state.
By 6140 Running Galesburg, your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude shoes and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots.
A three at the gun is no good, and this game is over! The Tigers have won! They're going to celebrate! Purple and gold converging on the Don Morris Gymnasium floor! Unbelievable!
By Diamond Ag, your local ag retailer supplier, built from your local specifications with locations in Alito, Alexis, and Knoxville.
She throws the first three in a row for Rockridge! The Rockets have won three state titles in a row in softball.
And by Dale Jones with Merit Auctions. If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale at 309-299-6400. And now, from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Lido, here's Jim Taylor and Ty Taylor with Sportsline.
It is the WMJ Sportsline on a Saturday morning, a tradition that started way back in 1979. Dale Jones Auctioneer Studio downtown Lido. I know it was an impressive display last night. They lit up the Christmas tree that's across the street from the WMJ studio.
We don't care about
that's
that.
That's right. Merry Christmas, everyone. Coming up later in the program, we'll have an extended conversation. Everybody's still probably mad about what happened last weekend with high school football state championship games, but we kind of take a deep dive into that and talk about what some of the potential solutions are. And it looks like probably the IHSA is going to make some type of change that will take effect with the next high school football season. So we'll get into that with Craig Anderson, IHSA Executive Director. And a tip of the cap to him, I was a little bit surprised because I thought, I don't know if they'll want to come on the air and talk about this just yet. But they're like, heck yes, we'll come on. And I think our conversation about 30 minutes that we recorded yesterday, so some pretty good stuff that's coming up. Of course, what an atmosphere last night. Listen to the game on WRMJ and WRMJ.com and streaming worldwide on the WRMJ app. I know the Tigers got up early, I think 11-2, something like that. And then I really thought when they came back late in the first quarter into the second quarter, Rockridge, I thought, typical Rockridge. They're going to walk out of this gym with a win. But credit, the Sherrard Tigers for making the plays and I think overcoming a key turnover late in the game, and then Rockridge commits a turnover with 2 seconds left in the game where they had the ball. But what a way to start the conference season. Quite a game last night.
How many times in the last 10 years do you think that Rockridge has trailed the entire game? They did not lead once. I mean, that's quite a performance by Sherrard last night. And the thing that like you said, that was impressive is it felt like, you know, Sherrard down the stretch really was struggling to put the game away, where, and I know Coach Johnson talked about this in our post-game interview with him, where he felt like, you know, it just was so many things they could clean up late. And I kept thinking that the stat that, like, was scary for me if I'm Sherrard is that, you know, Rockridge hadn't made a three all night, and they're throwing the ball in with 2 seconds left down two. I'm like, well, this is where they're typically going to hit a three and win this game, but they threw the ball in the bowl. He stepped out of bounds, and that was kind of the end of the night. But like you said, I think that the impressive thing for both teams is on the defensive end, 38-35. Sherrard made just 1 3. They were averaging like 7.5 threes a game and were shooting over 40% as a team from beyond the arc. So both teams did a really good job defensively. But it just felt like a huge win for Sherrard last night. They kind of, the first hump, that they have a few humps they need to get over. The first one was beating Rockridge, and they did it last night. 38-35. Rockridge had won 35 straight conference games. That got snapped, and it was 13 in a row they had beaten Sherrard in boys basketball. And the day count was 2,846 days. And Sherrard snaps that. And I just think, for that program and for those kids, it's such a huge thing just for them to see themselves beat Rock Ridge. That felt like the hump itself, because you knew they were as talented as them. It just was, could they actually do it? And they did it in the first time they played them, and now I think this Sherrard team has the potential to really, really, really go on quite a run this year, I think. They've got a lot of talent. They're deep, and they can shoot it. That's kind of the thing they haven't had in years, the past couple of years when they've really been turning around, is they haven't consistently been able to shoot it from the perimeter. Outside of last night, the first five games, they've shot it really well. So I really like the personnel they have. And, you know, the top 8, 9 kids they play all play really hard. They all defend well, and they're physical. And that's a good-looking team, Sherrard.
Yeah, and I think, too, when you even kind of look, you segue from last year to this year, where I think, and even though Macomb became the hot team in the postseason last year, I think that program walked off the floor last year and thought, hey, this season ended prematurely. And we were a regional championship team and didn't get it done. And, you know, to their credit, you know, last night when I was listening to that game and kind of charting that game, to me, I just thought Rock Ridge is hanging around. They'll win it in the end. And somehow the Tigers get the win, and then they hashtag storm the court. I like how their band plays over there. And it wasn't just – and that's where people, if they were just listening to that game last night, their band always plays after the game is over, win or lose. And I just thought it was a great atmosphere. And I know kind of that fan base over at Sherrard, and it's a tip of the cap to them. They've been hungry, and they've suffered through some – if you talk – it's about not about winning and losing all the time, but they've suffered through, you know, waiting for some of these marquee wins at that place. And I'm so happy they got one last night, you know, on a Friday night in a key conference game against the team the conference still runs through. Even though the Rockets still have one loss in the league, the conference still runs through them. And they have a rematch coming up in, I think, late January. And it's going to be interesting now with Rock Ridge, you know, and we'll have them on the airwaves today. They got to get up, travel all the way up. It's not easy to get to Lanark, Illinois, in the northwest part of the state, and play a pretty good team in Seneca that's had pretty good tradition too. So I'm anxious to see how the Rockets respond today. And you know, a lot of these kids, I thought too, you look at, and we've talked about it before, I think a lot of the mindset too from some of the kids that are the football players, I thought a lot of those kids probably thought, hey, we should have been playing into the final weekend of the football season and kind of transitioning. I'm not saying that's the excuse, but transitioning into basketball season from the football season, you know, and then playing a key conference game like this right off the bat, you know, who knows? But still a potential that they're going to meet two more times, just one more time.
And I think for Rock Ridge, and there are every program you can't say this for, but for them, with the success they've had and all the wins that these kids have had, meaning Bull Wheatley and Kunico, for them losing a game in December, I mean, it was a big game and everything, but it's like not time to push the panic button or anything. I mean, they've proven time and time again that when it really, really counts, they come through. And like you said, I mean, 6-7 weeks away, they'll play again. And I know that's going to be a game this has always been a game that Sherrard really had circled. That rematch will be a game that Rock Ridge has circled, because like we said, that we said this coming into the season, what they've done in boys basketball especially is when any team in the area has gotten to the point where they're kind of threatening Rock Ridge at the top, they smoke them. Like, remember that year they played Princeton? They destroyed Princeton. Oh, everyone was saying Princeton was better than them, and Rock Ridge was 30 points better than Princeton that night. So that's the impressive thing too, where they've always been so like territorial almost when it comes to like, I know the kind of attitude they've had is they would always feel like disrespected when you say, okay, this team is coming close to your level, and then they would kill them and say, no, 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 they're not. Well, last night, Sherrard, with that, was able to get a win. And like you said, it was an incredible atmosphere, and you talked about the Sherrard-like fan base. I mean, it was – when I got there, it was a zoo trying to park, and then you get in there, and like at the tip-off of the JV game, I mean, the home stands were probably 60-70% full at the beginning of the JV game, so Sherrard really has got things rolling in the right direction. Last night was a huge win for them. You can't understate how big of a win it was, but there's still work to do. They have a game Tuesday against Morrison. That's a game they need to take care of and win, and then next Friday for the Tigers, another test in the conference at Orin, which should be another great atmosphere in the league.
Yeah. When they always play. But you know, even though, and I agree somewhat, you don't push the panic button, but
I do want to go back and see when the last time Rockridge boys basketball has lost three in a row was. Yeah. It's probably been quite a while.
I'm getting back to about not pushing the panic button. I agree it's December, but when you have won 35 in a row in the conference and you finally lose one and it's the arch rival school that beats you, it's a little bit different. And it'll be interesting to see, like you said, really how both programs respond. How does Sherrard handle the victory? Are they going to have a letdown? Because we've seen it coming for the last several years that they have this group of players coming through where they have an opportunity to really get on a special run, and they've amped up their schedule a little bit where they're going to get some key tests.
They've already played Rockford Christian and Rockridge in the first, you know, 10 days of the season, basically.
And they have a top five team in West Hancock they're going to play in January at the Carl Sandburg.
Top 10. Yeah. They're not in the top five. Come on.
Well, they're eventually going to be with the schedule they play and the attention that they're getting that normally translates to votes in the poll. And then, those trap games too, like I think Orion's a trap game. But this team, you know, just looking at the pieces and listening to the broadcast last night, you knew Blackwell and Carton, right? But it's like, hey, who are they? And Carter Brown. But you heard some of these other pieces, like the Bender kid who made a huge play last night. Those type of plays are so big. And then I'm not going to say the Veranda kid came out of nowhere, but, you know, just watching him play last night on the NFHS feed, I'm like, man, that dude's a good player.
He is good. Yeah, he can score. Like Coach Johnson said last night too, he's kind of the thing is, oh, he's undersized, but that dude can play. He even with being, you know, 5'9", 5'10", or however tall he is, he does a good job making up for that. I mean, he made a couple of baskets around the Richard kid who's 6'7", who's basically, you know what, 8 inches taller than him. He really does a good job kind of giving himself space. That high floater off the glass, he made two shots like that last night, and I really like him as a player. He's good, and he can shoot it. And like you said, the Brody Bender had a great night last night, I thought. Carter Brown played really, really well just as a defender. He just is so tough on defense, and I mean, he's just the level of athlete that he is. And Sherrard, they're pretty deep. They play 8 or 9. I really like the Partlow kid that came in. He played tough on defense for them, kind of got up in there, guarding Kunico a few possessions. So they did a really good job all around. And you know, they're working Aiden Taranez back into the rotation. He came out a little late. He wasn't going to play basketball this year. He's a Division I baseball player. And the story is great. I told on the broadcast last night, but he wasn't going to play. They did the Tiger showcase that Coach Johnson does with all the boys basketball hoopla before the season. And I guess Toronto saw that, and the next day texted Coach Johnson and said that he wanted to be a part of the basketball program again. They let him back. He hasn't played a ton yet because he's got to get back into basketball shape, but played a lot of minutes last night. Got a couple of nice stops defensively, a couple rebounds, had a nice assist on a basket too. So he's a really nice piece. He's a huge piece they got back that they weren't going to have. So as he kind of works back in, because he's not at 100% of his ability yet either. So once he kind of gets settled back into basketball mode, this team, they're already really good. They, like I said, they got a chance to really go on a nice run this year.
And I'm glad you brought up that about Aiden Taranez, right? Because he went out late after the season started. And back in the day, right, everybody says old school, you know, back in the day, once the season started, and if you didn't go out, they weren't going to let you play. And, you know, this is the one thing that I like now where there's leeway with that. And I credit the Sherrard coaching staff and the Sherrard program saying, yep, you're welcome back to play. You can play. You weren't at the beginning of the season. And I say that in today's culture for all sports. If a kid decides he wants to come out for that sport a couple weeks into the season, I say 100% you let him. Because back in the day, they wouldn't do that. And I think you just need more leeway. And I'm glad, because I hear so many times, what do we always hear? Boy, there's these athletes in the school. We like to get them out in play, but the season's already started. They can't play now. Well, they're giving this kid the opportunity to come back. He realized he made a mistake and he wants to come back and play and be a part of the team. They welcome him back, and the kid's probably going to have an impact. But I will say one thing I liked about Rockridge last night. Now, I didn't see him, but you know, the Richard kid Richard that's 6'7", and he had 9 points or 10 points, something like that.
He finished with ten,
and that's a good newcomer for them, where you hope kind of the ceiling's a little bit higher for him, and he has the size, and you know. Apparently, they needed some additional scoring last night because Sherrard did a good job of shutting down Landon Wheatley and Caleb Kunico, so they're going to need some scoring from other places. So that was a good sign for Rockridge, I think.
That's the other thing with Sherrard defensively. I mean, I'm going to say that Caleb Kunico will not go scoreless again this year, and what they did on him was really good. Like you said, Wheatley, the only basket he scored was on a backdoor cut where Bull was double-teamed and he found him. It felt like, and this might not even be an exaggeration, we don't chart assists, but Landon Bull might have scored an assist on every field goal for Rock Ridge last night.
It seemed like it listening to the game.
He is tough, man. And he's just, we talk about this when he was a freshman too, but his court vision and ball handling and passing, he still kind of surprises you with how good he is at it. He just knows where everybody is on the floor. I was so impressed with him last night. But it was a lot of uncharacteristic things for Rock Ridge where, I mean, you talk about only scoring 35 points, and they turned it over 15 times last night. 15. So, credit the Sherrard defense. They've kind of made that high pressure thing a staple for them, and they've bought into it, and their kids do such a good job recovering when they, you know, the other team breaks the press or whatever. So I just can't say enough good things about how Sherrard played last night. Last night, like I said earlier, was a huge win in so many different ways because of just the level of success that Rockridge has had, and because of that. And with Sherrard being the local, like you said, arch rival, I mean, for years and years and years, they haven't just got beat by Rockridge. They've gotten hammered and beat up by Rockridge over and over and over and over. And last night, to finally get over the hump, they played them competitive the past 2 years, really. But to win is a lot different than to lose competitively. And I just am really impressed they were able to do it. And the other thing too, now we talked about Aiden Taranis, his dad came up to me when I was leaving after the game, and he wanted me to make sure I knew the stat. He said that, you know, we, meaning his son and his son's class, have played Rockridge and boys basketball since they were third graders, that senior class, and he said that we've never beat them until tonight. And I'm going to assume with those three guys they have that probably a lot of those games were pretty lopsided, I would say, growing up because of just how advanced those kids were at a young age. So that's a special win for those kids, man. And not just the kids on the team. Like, you could tell how excited the kids that were in the student section for sure. They had an unbelievable following last night. It was loud in there. And getting a win on their home court over Rockridge in the home opener, that's a awesome way to start the season for Sherrard. You couldn't even really draw it up better for them, I don't think.
All right, so that's the, you know, the headliner game early in December, and now we kind of transition. I know there's still some conference games taking place, but some shootouts coming up, and then the holiday tournaments. I know Sherrard has a good field for their holiday tournament, the Mike Hutchins tournament, and then the Rockets. We'll be at the Macomb Western or Western Macomb.
It's Macomb Western. That drives me just nuts that you say it wrong every time. I mean,
I've broadcast five championship games from there.
And you don't call it by the right name. Yeah.
We just win. But the other thing about that, though, too, you know, when is the last time the Rockets potentially aren't going to be a top four seed at that tournament?
I think they will be.
It'll be interesting to see because don't they do the seeding this week or next week?
December 15th.
Yeah, next week.
Okay.
So what do they got left?
But let me ask you this.
I know strength of schedule.
How many teams in that field, if they play Rockridge's schedule, are better than 2 and 3? I'm going to say maybe West Hancock. Maybe. Nobody else.
I would agree.
And I think that in that field, outside of West Hancock, Sherrard is definitely better than everybody else in that field. And so is Diet, and so is Rocky for sure. So, because Rocky, I mean, not the Gillsburg team, but they beat them like 40 last night. So,
and then so Rockridge, they have a conference game Tuesday or a non-conference?
They don't play Tuesday.
Are they back in conference play
Friday against Riverdale?
And Riverdale, who struggled in the first half last night against Monmouth Roosevelt, came back and won by double digits,
71-54.
So that'll be interesting
and then
matchup.
It's Moline for them.
Yeah.
And then I think it's Mirko. So, yeah, and then for Sherrard, it's Morrison Tuesday Orion Friday. That Orion game next Friday is that's an interesting one. Both teams will be 1-0 in the conference going into that. Orion has a chance to, I believe, avenge that loss to Ridgewood this week.
But they're going to play in Cambridge.
They probably will, I think. Yeah, I think that Sherrard-Orion game next Friday will have a lot of intrigue and eyes on it. That's the game we're going to do next Friday night, Sherrard and Orion, with both of those teams trying to get a 2-0 in league play. Boy, it's going to be a fun year in the conference. There's a lot of good teams. A lot of good teams. Sherrard, Rock Ridge, Orion, you know, Monmouth-Roseville, Riverdale, of course, and Mercer County's showing some flashes early in the season, too. It's going to be a fun Friday night from, you know, basically one end of the year to the other. I just, every Friday is going to be a lot of fun in the track. I'm excited.
All right. And our guest again today on the program is Craig Anderson, IHSA Executive Director. We'll talk about, you know, the aftermath of the state championship football weekend with the lopsided scores between parochial schools who put the beating on the public schools, or you can call them non-boundary schools, versus the public schools. So we'll kind of get into that and see what the option is. We appreciate that, audience. Now, I was going to have some wrestling conversation on today, but at the last moment, we got this IHSA conversation. So next week, we'll talk some wrestling with our local coaches, Jeff Garrett at Sherrard, Lucas Smith at Rock Ridge, and Jeremy Finch at Mercer County. But I do see kind of the numbers, at least across the board, seem to be up in that sport, so that's good to see.
All right, before we go to break, we haven't mentioned this on Sportsline yet. It happened way back on Monday this week, but I want to give a congratulations to Doug Swanson. Won his 300th game, then won his 301st game this week. So right now, I believe his career record sits at 301-104. So by the end of the year, he'll be 200 games over 500. Yeah. And to win 300 games in he hasn't coached 15 full seasons. He's coached 13 full seasons and a half of a season plus the first five games. So the level of success they've had is incredible. He deserves a lot of credit, and it's a cool, 300 wins in basketball is a ton of wins. I mean, that's a sustained success for a long time.
13 and a half seasons is amazing.
So congratulations to him. Sherrard girls program off and running again this year. They're off to a 2-0 start in the conference, I think. 5-1 overall right now, and their only loss was to Sterling, who's a good team in the Western Big Six. So it's the Tigers, and they're off to the fastest start of anybody in the winter in both basketball and boys and girls basketball. Sherrard. Harry Hunt Gymnasium's the place to be.
Yeah, and again, it was great to hear their band last night. I thought they added to the vibe of that place. And I know when I first started, you know, here and back in the 90s, you know, when Eric Hutchins was playing back in those days, and now he's at the PA, full circle moment.
He was, you know, he was letting it eat last night. He was,
that was the place to be, and I hope it's, you know, all schools should get that experience. That was the place to be back then, and hopefully it can be the place to be again with these games to be played. And then the other cool story, and I don't think maybe you have said this publicly on the air, but they're getting the sectional this year in boys basketball too, which would really be awesome if they could get back there for, you know, trying to get to the super sectional would be a great story.
And
for
I'll
them.
Tell you this about Sherrard, and this is early, but that win last night will do a lot for them when you talk about eventually when we get to seeding for the subsection.
Oh yeah, no question.
There's going to be a because I believe the regional sites are Mercer County and Macomb. I believe the two top seeds will definitely be Rock Ridge and Sherrard. Well, where the top seed will get a stay close to home and play in Aledo, and then the other team will have to go over to Macomb. So that's another thing that will be interesting in about a month and a half to kind of follow where that looks in terms of who they think will, or who potentially could get seeded first in the subsectional. But Sherrard took a big, big, big first step to doing that last night. There's a lot of work to do, of course. It's one game on December 6th, but it's a huge win. It's a big win for Sherrard, and it's going to be really intriguing. That return game in like 6 or 7 weeks is going to be awesome. I'm excited to see how that plays out. But Sherrard, man, that's a big win for them last night, and I just hope they can not slip up and just kind of keep rolling. Because like I said earlier, they've got a lot of pieces, a lot of good pieces, and with the two kind of top seniors they have with Carton and Blackwell. Those are two tough players, and they can score in a lot of different ways. And this is one other thing that to say before we wrap up. Both Blackwell and Carton are shooting better than 50% from three early in the season. I mean, that's impressive. I mean, 6'4", 6'3", they both can get to the basket too. They can score from all three levels, both of those guys, and they're the real deal. They're the real deal. Sherrard's really good.
Well, and then as funny as listening to the broadcast, a couple times late in the game, it's like, oh man, Blackwell got hurt, and then Carton got hurt. I'm like, are you kidding me? That's not going to happen to this team, is it? And then I'm Veranda so glad too. They came back.
Yeah, I was worried. Yeah. I was worried.
I'm
too.
Like, yeah. So, well, it's we're only in early December and have a lot of compelling games left, but I think there's no question. There's two elite teams now in the area that have a chance to make maybe some significant noise. We always hope for these deep postseason runs, and I think there's two teams right now in this area that have the potential to do that, and that both holiday tournament venues are going to be fun where they play at.
That Sherrard Field is great. Yeah. I mean, if you look at it, Princeton, Byron, East Dubuque, Anawan, who's off to a great start. They've been killing everybody they've played. They've destroyed everybody they've played. And then there might be one other good team in there that I'm forgetting. But, that Sherrard Field's good. That'll be a fun tournament over there just in its second year in a couple weeks.
All right. Well, you want to get to Craig Anderson. Pleased to have him on the WRMJ airwaves, because I know that's the one thing that I was a little bit not angry, but just kind of frustrated last week when you saw the social media banter about certain things. Hey, I don't like to see the lopsided scores either, but trying to, there's some people are accusing whatever or making some of these statements that are nowhere near true, and it's a membership driven organization. I'm like, is anybody ever going to talk to the IHSA and actually ask what their reaction is and maybe what some of the potential solutions are? Because it's like, even if you're a member school and you lose head-to-head in a game, you still have the opportunity to say, okay, I'm going to author the bylaw amendment, and let's see if the member schools will support it. And any member school, Mercer County, Rockridge, Sherrard, Orion, can author a bylaw amendment on high school football playoffs. And then whether the membership supports it or doesn't, it's up to the membership. So we get into that today with Craig Anderson and talk about the aftermath of last weekend's IHSA high school football state championship games. What was the parochial school? I know they kept saying what the I can't even remember now what the outcome was with the scoring.
I can give it to you in a second. Let me look that up. I believe off the top of my head it was the six head-to-head private versus public. I believe it was something like 283-76. Yeah. I'm right.
Yeah, and that's going to
over 200 points in six games.
Yeah, that's good.
And that doesn't even say how lopsided the games were. I mean, the games were even worse than that sounds. It was unbelievable. So again, everyone's in agreement that last week at the IHSA football state championship games, there were a few teams that were playing in classifications that they had no business playing.
Right.
Althoff never should play 1A. Montini should never play 3A. Even DePaul Prep should not be 4A. They're a much bigger school than that. And that's the other thing, too. Well, that's the whole thing that doesn't really matter to get into. But their enrollment has grown so much over the past 2 years, and it's a two-year enrollment cycle where their current enrollment figures, I think, as a private school, were at 1,100, and they were playing 4A.
Yeah.
So, even if they were at their true enrollment – on this year, they would have been up, but it's like they were playing down. It is crazy.
But I didn't realize, and you'll hear it in the interview, because we just talk about what has happened this year or a week ago. But then I didn't realize last year, six of the eight state champions were public schools last year. And, of course, each year brings its own set of circumstances. So what the answer is... Yes.
I don't think, though, the issue is private schools winning. I think the issue, by and large, was Althoff playing in 1A.
Yes, they set the tone.
And Montini playing in 3A. That just is not... You hate to say it because it sounds like you're crying, but it's not fair for that Althoff team to play 1A football.
Well, that's
what
I'm saying.
That was one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen.
And then, but, still, when you even look at it and you say that about Montini,
They still, if
how crazy it is,
they could have lost in the second round of the 3A playoffs this year if the Byron running back on the two-point conversion gets one more inch.
Yeah,
they lose in the second round.
But that's the only team.
No, I know.
That's the
that should have been the state title
and
game.
And they're like a generational team.
Oh,
and they're the only team that could even play with them. So that's why they shouldn't be in 3A anyway.
Yeah, and like you said, there's going to be a change leading up to next year. At least that's what Craig Anderson
said. He said there could be. He doesn't say there
I
will be.
I still think there will be.
So we'll see.
There's just too much. There's too much pushback right now. So that's coming up with Craig Anderson. He's up next. It's the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios, WMJ Sportsline.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29 by the buy here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
Building relationships, supporting the community and service. These are the things Country Financial stands for. We're neighbors who lend a helping hand and support the fabric of our community, including charitable organizations, sports, financial education, and civic organizations. Since we're already neighbors, let's get together and chat to talk about the things that are important to you and how we can help you protect them. See your local Country Financial representative today.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Who doesn't love new kicks? If you need new footwear or it's the perfect gift for someone on your list, 614 Zero Run has just the right fit. Check out their quality brands for fitness, Hoka, Saucony, Mizuno, and Brooks, for just hanging out, Hey Dude, and Birkenstock, and even for work, Red Wing and Wolverine. The best gift of all is a 614 Zero Run gift card. Never worry about getting the wrong shoe or style. 614 Zero Run, 185 Main Street in Galesburg.
Jim Taylor back on WRMJ, WRMJ.com. Ty Taylor on the call. We also get a chance to visit today, and we appreciate the audience with IHSA Executive Director Craig Anderson. A lot of reaction following the state championship games last weekend in football, and of course, much of it had to do with outcome, and much of it had to do with this public parochial or non-boundary school debate. So I'm going to open it up this way, Mr. Craig Anderson, just kind of your reaction to last weekend and maybe what will be some of the conversations as a result of that and maybe what happens next. So take it away, Craig Anderson.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Jim. It's always great to connect with you, and thanks, Ty, for joining us as well. Yeah, so you know, I was there for all eight games. That probably isn't a surprise to anyone, being a football guy and, you know, being in the role I am. I really enjoyed that weekend. It was a little chilly, but you know, great competition. And I've stayed off social media for a lot of reasons, but we've definitely gotten some correspondence, and most importantly, the correspondence that I'm concerned about is what we hear from our member schools. And And the outcomes of those games have, I think, brought a level of desire from our membership and our administrators in particular for us, our staff and our board of directors, to look at what we can do in terms of the private-public circumstances of competition. And so at first blush, you know, the Friday games in particular, not that they were private public necessarily, but just how outmatched some of the contests were, all those games going to a a 40-point running clock before the end of the game, causes a concern. And we looking at the matchups and how schools had had fallen into some multiplier waivers who probably shouldn't have, and had in some ways taken advantage of that with the classifications that they fell into. Our current policy language is going to cause a number of the football playing schools we saw, last weekend be elevated anyway, because their success and a couple of the schools returning for multiple or back-to-back state trophies being won are going to be success factored, and all of that is currently in place. But obviously it didn't help what happened this past weekend, and we know that other private schools have the potential of receiving a multiplier waiver when maybe they probably shouldn't, because they're still really good. They just haven't had maybe quite the level of success. So in all of that, we have a board meeting coming up in December. We've had preliminary sharing of information with our board. The board has at their access and overview a classification policy where the multiplier number of 1.65 for our non-boundary schools has application within the bylaws, and that number can't be changed until the membership says we're going to increase the multiplier number. What the board has discretion over is the waiver of the multiplier, and when and how schools, non-boundary schools, get relief of the waiver. And I think that's going to be a topic that we'll dig into. That has a potential to change at the discretion of the board. Other things that are being talked about is our classification cycle, where currently we're reviewing changes in classification only once every 2 years. And there's a potential we go back to an annual review where when schools do show some level of success, that will have things in place that may increase their classification from 1 year to the next, as opposed to being in the same class for two consecutive years and having a great deal of success within those 2 years. So those are a couple of the things that our board actually has access to. And then, membership wide, obviously we've gotten some outreach, as I started with, from our schools. It is time for us to take a look at this and to make some changes that do make sense for us to try to put non-boundary schools in a classification that they truly belong and where the level of competition should be, relatively the same. And so while we want to see schools that have success make it, and we'd like to have different and variety of schools make it to the state finals, we want it to be competitive, and that's really our hope.
Yeah, Craig, for the listener who maybe isn't as in tune and doesn't follow, high school sports religiously, but watches the state finals, I think a lot of the talk, like you alluded to there, is a couple of the smaller classifications where you had, a couple of private schools really win by a big margin. So can you walk through the listener what the current process is? You talked about the 1.65 multiplier to private schools kind of in football, how that is put out there and how a school can get a waiver. Like, how's the current process just for the maybe person who doesn't follow as closely?
Yeah, sure. So, and I get it. Our state finals bring a lot of attention to folks, and so they may not, have any scope of what happens prior to. And so for the non-boundary schools, we have a bylaw that says the 1.65 multiplier will be applied. But then after that, within the bylaw, it says that the board of discretions will have the board of directors will have discretion over to permitting a multiplier waiver. And so when it first started, there was a process for which there would be application for the waiver, where private schools or non-boundary schools would have to apply to get that waiver. During the few years that we had that process, very few schools applied for a waiver. And as a result, the board several years ago decided, we're going to establish a criteria. It's a postseason success criteria that when non-boundary schools don't achieve a certain level of success over the previous 2 years, that they have relief of the multiplier. In other words, they get classified according to their actual enrollment, just like the public schools. And so the waiver within football is allowed when schools within the last 2 years don't win more than three playoff football games. So that's a combination of 2 years. If they 1 year win a first round game and the second year win two rounds, then that school would not be subject to the waiver. But those that don't do that over a 2 year cycle in advance of a new 2 year classification cycle would have relief of the multiplier. So just for the listeners to have an example, Belleville Altoff 4 years ago, or 4 and 3 years ago, in the playoffs, likely with a multiplier, did not win three playoff games in the 2 years combined. So starting last year, they received a waiver of the multiplier, and their enrollment, actual enrollment, put them in 1A. And so they competed 1A last year, went all the way to the quarterfinals, I believe. And since we have a 2 year classification cycle, they obviously were back in 1A again this year and then had a lot of success. But because of that success, next year under our current policy, if we don't change anything, they would be multiplied, and with a multiplied enrollment would likely place them in 3A at a minimum. So that's a little kind of how we navigate, and a particular kind of an example of how that works.
So I was going to ask, though, you know, I think the motivation of the conversation from last weekend, I don't think it was so much parochial schools winning as it was margin of parochial schools winning. So 57-14 in the 1A game, 47-0 in the 2A game, and then 49-8 in the 3A game. You know, non-boundary schools have won before, but not by that margin. And this is just playing, you know, kind of the other side of the spectrum here and saying, well, is it just an outlier this year by the margins? Because when you've looked in past years, like I said, even though parochial schools maybe have won, they haven't won by that margin. Is that what is really spurring, I'm assuming, the majority of this conversation, you know, from last weekend to this week, and trying to reach some type of decision by not, you know, reading too much into just 1 weekend of football, I guess? I mean, that's kind of a long question, but that's one of the things I guess the decision makers have to make.
Yeah, it is something that we have to contemplate. But to your point, I do think that is the reason that the conversation and the outreach from our member schools has reached the level that it has. It is because of what appears to be, you know, based upon that Friday in particular, but, you know, Saturday factors into it a little bit too. But the significant appearance of, you know, the private schools over the public schools in those four games, I think, has led to spurring this conversation to see what can we do to get these private schools that are very competitive, to put them in a classification where they fall more in alignment of the kind of schools and, you know, where they would play, and we'd have really, you know, they might return to the state finals, but they might return and play a team where, you know, it's going to be a 1 or 2 touchdown difference. So I do think, and this may be an outlier. I mean, you know, last year, I think we had, you know, 6 of the 8 public school state champions. So it definitely ebbs and flows from year to year. But to your point, I do think that the conversation has been elevated because of the outcomes of those games.
Well, and like you said there, it feels like it does fluctuate from year to year. And I know we were kind of talking about this a little bit before we started recording. And some of the stuff that drives me nuts is you see some of like the discourse online and on social media where people are saying like, oh, you know, the IHSA, they're happy about this, or it's just they're money grabbing. They're happy that private schools. And it's like, I don't think these people understand really what the problem is. So I know it feels kind of dumb you have to even, like, address it, but the IHSA doesn't want there just to be 8 blowouts in the state football championship games, right? I mean, it's just crazy that some of the stuff you see.
Yeah, and I appreciate you pointing that out because I don't know. For a lot of reasons, I'm not going there to take a look at what folks are saying, but you're exactly right. I mean, we'd love to see last minute, you know, we saw one in the 5A game. While it happened to be two private schools, but so competitive. You know, that's what we'd like to see in all 8 games. It doesn't always happen like that, but for sure, from our perspective, you know, we love to see a balance of competition from our non-boundaried and boundaried schools, and we'd like to see really good games. No question. It just brings more to the brand and brings more excitement for the fans. So that's what we want. We can't always create that, obviously, because we have limited control over that. But we're not about, I don't know that we make more money. I know we don't make more money because more private schools would advance to our state finals. It's not a money thing at all. It's about the high school experience. It's about our kids. It's competition, and them getting all the benefits of a competition. And, you know, we want that for our non-boundaried and boundaried schools and their students equally. But for sure, we'd love to see games be very competitive and have, you know, have that kind of excitement happen where we could get some really good games.
All right, a lot more to get to with IHSA Executive Director Craig Anderson. We'll continue our conversation with him next on WRMJ.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, but I'm here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
You finally have your dream home. Now you need the right insurance to protect it, because when it comes time to file a claim, you don't want any surprises. Talk to a Country Financial representative to find out if you have the right protection. They can help you understand your options and select coverages to meet your needs.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Home insurance policies issued by Country Mutual Insurance Company, Country Casualty Insurance Company, or Country Preferred Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Who doesn't love new kicks? If you need new footwear or it's the perfect gift for someone on your list, 614 Run has just the right fit. Check out their quality brands for fitness: Hoka, Saucony, Mizuno, and Brooks. For just hanging out, Hey Dude and Birkenstock. And even for work, Red Wing and Wolverine. The best gift of all is a 614 Run gift card. Never worry about getting the wrong shoe or style. 614 Run, 185 Main Street in Galesburg.
All right, back on Sportsline this morning on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. Ty Taylor, Jim Taylor, talking with IHSA Executive Director Craig Anderson, continuing our conversation about the public-private debate that's taken over the state with last week's state title games. Jim Taylor, you look like you got something to ask.
Do you think then, kind of moving forward then, that one of the options is going away from the waiver? And then do you think there is, you know, wiggle room for the multiplier in terms of increasing the number from 1.65?
Yeah, so I think both of those things are definitely things that we'll be considering. The membership will make a determination of whether we increase that multiplier number or not. That has to go to the membership for a vote. But whether we eliminate the waiver opportunity or we change, you know, the limit or what schools have to do or their performance level in state series history to be able to receive the waiver, I think are ways at which we can get the multiplier to apply to more schools. And then, you know, those schools that we saw take advantage of the waiver this year end up in classifications where they probably don't belong based upon the outcomes of the games they played, you know, not just at the state finals, but leading up to the state finals, I think are two ways at which we'll probably be discussing more immediately will be the multiplier waiver, because that's what the board can control. And then after that, you know, we'll continue discussions with the membership if there should be an increase in the multiplier number itself.
And then with that, I know coming up, the IHSA has a football advisory committee meeting. So, I mean, with that meeting coming up, do you expect any sort of like recommendation from the advisory committee on something in terms of this public-private debate that has, you know, sparked such a conversation over the past couple weeks?
We could, yeah. You know, that's one thing that the board of directors has discretion over, as I mentioned, our classification policy that has the waiver language in it. So while the football advisory committee could offer a recommendation, that's all it could be. Their really targeted focus is about our state series. And so my anticipation is the football advisory committee is going to look very closely at our playoffs system. We've had an ad hoc committee focused on football playoffs that's reviewed the possibility of increasing the number of teams that make the playoffs. And so we haven't sent that and had the advisory committee weigh in on that. And so I think that's something that they'll be focused on at their upcoming meeting. I'm sure the conversation will happen about, you know, what the effect of the playoffs all the way through to the state finals and their thoughts about how things could be changed. But to me, that's really a board of directors conversations. And we are going to talk about that in at our board meeting coming up this Monday, which is in advance of the football advisory committee.
So my question though, you know, in terms of if there is a change made, is the timeline for the next football season? Do you see something implemented by the next season?
I do. Yes. I think the board has discretion over the policy. We're moving into a new classification cycle to begin next school year. So the timing is appropriate for our board to review, to make recommendations, to be implemented on their vote and approval for the 25-26 school year. So we're in the right place for the board to review, to consider some changes and to implement those changes before next football season and across all sports, potentially, whatever changes they might decide.
Well, and a lot of the chatter from some people I've seen is wanting, and this is something that's been a case for, you know, a while, where some people want to see a separate, you know, state series for private schools and public schools. I mean, to me, I'm not in favor of that, never would be, but is that something you see as maybe a possibility that could get brought up or maybe even be implemented, or is that something you don't think will ever happen?
Well, I hope that it never happens. I think we're better together and we need to continue to work together. There are some things we can modify. We've spent a lot of time talking about that just now. To me, that is the very last thing that we should be considering. I'm like you. I don't want it. I know that people talk about it, but I don't think that's in the best interest of the association. We've got a long history of working together. I think we should continue to work together. I know we can continue to work together. We can modify policy language. The membership can decide to impact the multiplier number where they think it's appropriate. So all those things would lend itself to, I think there's a number of steps we can take that would keep us from separating into separate tournaments. And it's my hope that we never get to that spot. I know states have, and that creates separation and really creates probably two associations as opposed to one with a separate set of rules. I hope it never happens here in Illinois, because I think we've got a good product. We've got a good thing going. You know, we spend a lot of time here talking about football, but in our other sports, cross country and in volleyball and other things that happened, soccer this fall, we had some great championships, really overtime games in our state final soccer championships. So there's a lot of good things happening when we work together, and that'll be my goal and focus going forward.
And we appreciate the time here from Craig Anderson. Just two more things that I want to bring up. You know, when we just look at the results, and I forgot last year you mentioned 6 of the 8 were public school winners, right? But this year it's reversed. So we're going back and forth. But I was telling you off the air, it was interesting. I was having a conversation. I was at a basketball game this week watching my daughter, and I was having kind of a round table discussion with three people that were there. Jeff Flater, former athletic director, Dave Hasley, longtime official, and then Reed Kelso, a young AD at A-Town. And we were talking about these issues and trying to figure out, hey, what is the solution? Because there's so much to consider. But I think about just like this playoff system here in 2024, because I look at like in 3A, in the second round, if Byron gets a 2-point conversion, it's a public school championship game in 3A. And then I think in 2A, Chicago Christian, you know, Downs Tri-Valley had a chance to beat them, I think, way back in the second round. Farmington may had a chance in the quarters against them or the semis. So that's why I look at this analytically, and I think, well, would we be having this conversation if the results were a little bit different and those things happened in the 2A and 3A playoffs? So that's kind of how I view it a little bit. But again, it was the margin from Friday of those three games, or really the four games, I should say, 1A through 4A, that have really kind of sparked this discussion, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think it has been that the discrepancy of those scores and the outcomes that had us or have us doing this, kind of talking about this. So there's no question, I think, if a couple of those games go a little different direction and we have closer games, or, you know, the games are involving two public schools as opposed to a private and a public. I don't know that we're engaged in this conversation. Now, I don't think it keeps our board from having a discussion, because we did have a bylaw amendment proposal. While it didn't make it to the ballot, it was showed some level of support that we still needed to have a conversation about our public and private and use of the waiver, the application of the waiver. So I think this discussion was going to happen no matter what. I think it's just brought more publicity to the conversation that needed to be had because of the outcomes of those games on Friday.
Yeah, and then the other thing too with that, and you talked to it about it there a little bit. So the way the postseason brackets work in football is the classes 7A and 8A are seeded 1 through 32, and then 1A through 6A or 1 through 16 on both halves of the bracket, where we touched on it there, where Montini and Byron play in the second round this year in 3A, and that basically turned out to be, I mean, what everybody thought were the two best teams, and it proved that was the case. So when you look at the postseason brackets and seeding, I think this is kind of a two-part question. One, do you ever expect to go back to 1 through 32 in all the classes? And then another thing I think that people talk about is the seeding process, where even though, and I know it's a difficult thing to, you know, enforce in terms of like strength of schedule, but, you know, Montini was seeded whatever, 8th or 9th in 3A in the North, where they had 2 or 3 losses. But of course, the regular season schedule they play in the Chicago Catholic League is an incredible degree of difficulty. So just those two things in terms of like seeding with strength of schedule and then the 1 through 32, 1 through 16 debate. I mean, where do you think we're at in that as we move forward next season?
Yeah, from my perspective, the travel that's created in the 6 classes of which we break the state in half would be exacerbated if we try to go 1 through 32. And I don't think that's in the best interest of our schools. To have to travel. And I get it, even in when we do 2 halves of 116, some of the travel is significant, but I think it even gets worse if we try to go 1 through 32. So that may be brought up by the Football Advisory Committee again. I don't think it's in the best interest of our schools and the association to get that expanded geography. When it comes to the seating, you bring up a good point there, and I've had it mentioned from a couple different people now, mainly school administrators, that, you know, our process when, especially when there's competition in the regular season where schools are maybe losing to a team that's two classes above them, while it counts as a loss, it's really different when they get put in a, you know, a particular classification. So I think there may be a way, and we've had internally this conversation about using a strength of schedule and some factors. Max Preps has a way of which they can kind of rank schools. And if, you know, if our membership would agree to it, you know, once we know the qualifiers, we could look at a ranking system as opposed to the current number of wins, your opponent's wins and losses, that we currently create the breakout. So I do think that conversation could happen, which would allow maybe a more accurate kind of 1 through 16 or 1 through 32, depending upon the classifications and the makeup. But that would be something that would probably come through our different advisory committees and their agreement that the timing is such that we kind of move in that direction, as opposed to in our other class sports, we use a coach's vote, as you guys all know. But maybe, you know, the coach's vote isn't the right way to do it, and we should just go to some kind of system that ranks because of strength of schedule and the wins and losses of teams for football and for our other sports. I think if we go to it, we're probably going to go all in with all of our sports. So we'll see what happens and kind of what the thought of our advisory committees are about that.
All right. Well, I tell you, this has been awesome. Appreciate Craig Anderson visiting with us about, you know, I know this was like an emotionally charged issue on social media, like immediately after the state weekend. And that's why I wanted to, you know, give the IHSA some time and let this sink in and call a week later. And there was some great substance in this conversation. And I really, I sincerely mean that when you come on the air and talk with us. And it was so great when I was having that conversation this week. I was thinking, man, I wish Craig Anderson could be here right now with Reed Kelso, Jeff Flater, Dave Hasley, and Jim Taylor. And then we could go to the Casey's in Abingdon afterwards. But anyway, you've given us plenty of time today, Craig Anderson. Greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It went through my mind, Jim, that I could have probably benefited being a fly on the wall listening to that conversation. A lot of great minds there, I'm sure. So, but appreciate the time as always.
All right. Thank you, Craig Anderson. And you're listening to WRMJ, WRMJ.com.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, but I'm here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
Are you ready for your teen to get their license? At Country Financial, they know it's scary when you see your kids back out of the driveway for the first time. If you know your young driver has the proper protection from Country Financial, it's a little easier. Contact your local Country Financial representative to chat about car insurance today.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Policies issued by Country Mutual, Country Preferred, and Country Casualty Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Who doesn't love new kicks? If you need new footwear or it's the perfect gift for someone on your list, 614 Run has just the right fit. Check out their quality brands for fitness, Hoka, Saucony, Mizuno, and Brooks, for just hanging out, Hey Dude, and Birkenstock, and even for work, Red Wing and Wolverine. The best gift of all is a 614 Run gift card. Never worry about getting the wrong shoe or style. 614 Run, 185 Main Street in Galesburg.
discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
All right, winding down the WMJ Sports Line on a Saturday morning from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios. And we have high school hoops coming up later today, a shootout. And I tell you, there's some good games up in Lanark, Illinois, home of the Eastland Cougars, who co-op with Pearl City for the EPC football program, right? And we saw them, of course, during the high school football playoffs. And there is some good games up at Lanark today, including Rock Ridge, who will play Seneca, who has a decent basketball pedigree. I think in the early 2000s, they really had it rolling with the Callahan brothers back in the day for the Seneca Irish. That's a tentative, I think, a 5 o'clock broadcast, 5:30 tip-off, but there are really two other marquee games in that field today,
and
too,
so
right?
Along with the Rockridge-Seneca matchup, earlier in the day, Peoria-Notre Dame plays East Dubuque, and then the nightcap is a really high-level game. It's two teams in the top five in 1A, Eastland playing Hope Academy, who was at the state tournament last year in 1A, that brought a lot of talent back. So that's after the Rockridge game tomorrow night, or tonight, I should say, and that's going to be a fun matchup. I think that nightcap is going to be really high energy basketball, but I think even Rockridge-Seneca it's a big game. Rockridge got to get a win. They need to win in one of these games, and tonight is a chance for them to kind of get back on track.
Now, is Rockridge then, do they get it? Are they playing Peoria Notre Dame then later in the year too or not?
They're
at a shootout?
They're playing them at the Great Western Shootout.
Okay, so they'll get a scout on them then tomorrow. But yeah, those are three quality basketball games taking place in Lanark. Later today, again, Rockridge taking on Seneca, 5 o'clock around broadcast time, 5:30 tip-off. And then early next week, what do we got Tuesday? What's the game Tuesday night, boys basketball?
Sherrard Morrison.
And then Monday, Brimfield, Mirko, and girls down at Mercer County High School. And then Friday, Sherrard Orion. Should be a pretty good atmosphere over at Orion.
Thursday, Sherrard Riverdale girls.
Is that
Sherrard?
Sure, that would be a good matchup.
Yeah. It's like I'm living at Sherrard High School. Yeah. I was there twice this week. I'll be there twice this next week, too.
All right.
Where else would you rather
That's
be?
That's right. Well, what a game last night. Close game, a battle of two very good programs. Maybe good chance they meet two more times this year. And but, again, we love those type of games, the arch rivalry games, and great atmosphere, and again, coming down to basically the final possession. So the Rockets up at 5 o'clock today with our pregame 5:30 tip-off, taking on Seneca up in Lanark, Illinois. Anything else, Ty Taylor, or are they going to wrap it up today?
Ready to head to Lanark.
All right, get on the bus. And for Ty Taylor, Jim Taylor, WRMJ Sports.
This has been Sportsline on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. Brought to you by Diamond Ag, your local ag retail supplier, built from your local specifications with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville. Your local Country Financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, farm, or business by 6140 Running Galesburg. Your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude shoes, and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots. And by Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale at 309-299-6400. The preceding has been a presentation of WRMJ Sports, your high school sports voice of Western Illinois.